Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Good day, everybody. My name is David Marsh. I'm the chairman of OMFIF, and it's a great pleasure to introduce two people today to talk about the links between central bank digital currencies and indeed the whole development of crypto assets in general and the gold market, what this means for the yellow metal and how this might affect the relationship that investors have with bullion in the years ahead. And to discuss this, we've got John Reed, who's the chief market strategist at the World Gold Council, a man with plentiful experience in the world of mining and also in investment trends in gold. John has been with the World Gold Council now for about 5 years, having had a glittering career in the yellow metal before that in other institutions. And then Bob Wardrop, who's the director and co-founder of the Cambridge Centre for Alternative Finance, a man also with plentiful investment experience behind him, who's now leading the centre in the university city of Cambridge, looking into alternative finance and particularly interested in the links with the gold market. So welcome, both of you gentlemen. Just a few words of introduction. This goes back to a report that OMFIF and the World Gold Council did in November last year on central bank digital currencies and the implications for gold. And we came up with a number of conclusions, some of which were, I have to say, somewhat ambiguous. We don't really know what the future lies. We don't know whether the development of crypto assets and CBDCs in general, whether this will have a positive or negative impact on gold. What we do know is that investors need to take that into consideration. We were looking particularly at the reserve currency questions and the links for asset managers. And we could see all kinds of considerations here. We know that CBDCs could have quite a negative impact on the overall commercial banking market. There's disruptive influences there. We know also it could have big implications for reserve management. You could construct different cases under which gold could come into its own more as a reserve asset. If there's more volatility in different systems, different countries might have to hold more assets. On the other hand, if there becomes a more perfect and smooth market for transmission in foreign exchange, it could be that central banks don't need to hold so much gold as part of a lower propensity for reserve assets all told. So many, many implications. If I go to you, John, first of all, do you think that we need to take seriously, as gold investors, as people interested in gold, do we need to take seriously this genie of crypto assets that has now been let out of the bottle?
First of all, thank you very much for the invitation to talk here today. I think it's a really important subject. It's certainly one we get a tremendous amount of questions on. The crypto angle in general is something that that every journalist asks me when I'm speaking to them. Interestingly, less so from investors and participants in the gold market. And I do think that that's perhaps the right way to think about it, is that a lot of people are asking questions, but people in the market don't seem to be as concerned, perhaps, as journalists think we should be. Most of the questions so far as well have been about Bitcoin and maybe some other crypto assets. Central bank digital currencies haven't really been a topic of conversation that's come up, certainly as a threat or an opportunity for gold. And it's an area, obviously, that many central banks are spending a tremendous amount of time looking at the moment. And I think it's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. At this stage, the CBDCs, as seem to be contemplated, and I'd be interested in Bob's view on this, because he knows far more about CBDCs and alternative finance than I ever will, don't, I think, appear to present a threat to gold. And I don't actually think they present a tremendous opportunity as well. I'm willing to be persuaded, though, and I'm very keen to hear what Bob has to say on the topic.
So, Bob, that's a good entree point for you. As John says, you've been looking at this for quite some time. What are the implications in your view, Bob?
First of all, I found the report quite a good one. And that what you described, David, as that ambiguity, I think is appropriate. I think as John highlighted, you know, the jury is very much out. I mean, there's many different implementation models, policy transmission questions. Now, look, my background, as you pointed out, I have a lengthy background in the investment industry, but, you know, I did retrain essentially as an economic sociologist. And so I do tend to look at things through a sociological lens. And I think one of the things that wasn't really addressed in the report, not that it should have been, that has a bearing on this, kind of at a more very fundamental level, is in fact what's going on geopolitically. Now, there is a reference in the report to sort of these currency blocks that potentially might emerge and the impact that might have on the gold market if you have a, say, dominant CBDC within a sphere of influence. And I think what we're sensing, this is my personal view, okay, is that we are seeing kind of a hardening of the boundaries around these spheres of influence, where you may see, on the one hand, this representing higher stability and perhaps less demand for gold as you have a more dominant CBDC within a sphere, effectively crowding out some of the other currencies and serving a trading block, for example. One might think of perhaps Belt and Road or some of these other sort of spheres emerging. But on the other hand, of course, depending on the position and the reserves of that dominant currency, you could see an increase in demand for gold. So even when I look at what I think are fundamental geopolitical trends, it's very hard to call which way this will go in terms of demand for gold, other than the fact I think there's going to be impact, right? So what you might see is a period of volatility. And I think what's interesting in sort of underlying a lot of this is trust. You have to trust something. And I think where gold has an edge is, for how long has it been trusted as kind of a store of value? And I mean, if you take a look at some Edelman data, I don't know if people are familiar with Edelman's Trust Index. That's very good, actually, I think, that the Edelman organization does every year. Very large samples of trust of institutions globally. And, you know, if you look at some of the data from this January, they just published, right? I mean, you've got, you know, institutions trusted by less than half the population in the developed economies. And what does that mean for something issued by a central bank as opposed to an alternative issued by some other entity? By the way, business is highly trusted. And believe it or not, tech businesses are still highly trusted. Now, that sets up a kind of a very interesting dynamic for individuals in terms of, you know, choosing their store of value or their means by which they want to make payment, transfer. But gold still sits there, right? And I haven't seen, and I don't know if the World Gold Council has done research on, you know, trust in gold, but the proxies would suggest that trust is still quite high. And so I think this trust is going to play out. A number of geopolitical things going on right now that would suggest that as we drill into trust, what we're trusting, who we're trusting, gold may have a strong position through that by virtue of historical evidence. But John, I sense that you've got some comments.
It's a fascinating point, though, Bob, because I took part recently in a discussion with the Bundesbank on the issue of not gold, but a central bank digital currency. And of course, it is a very strong point that you're making, Bob. Would people trust something issued by a central bank, which might mean the big brother is watching them? There's all sorts of concerns about the transmissibility of data, anonymity. The Chinese talk about controlled anonymity for their digital currency, which is a slightly ominous word. And the Bundesbank concluded the whole point is trust. You know, we have to be trusted by the public in whatever we do. So, John, where does that leave gold?
Well, when I was preparing for this call, I was making some notes ahead of it, thinking about why institutions invest in gold. And two of those four points started with the word trust. One of them, the first one, is a lot of investors in gold distrust the commercial financial system. They're worried from time to time, greater or lesser extent, about the safety of their savings in banks. And that's something that I could see where a central bank digital currency could actually be, if it's available to the public, could be a real boon for savers and investors and could potentially undermine gold somewhat. But the other point as well is, and I think that this is a, this comes back to the point that, that David was making. The other trust point is trust in the state and the state financial system and the institutions as a whole. So lots of examples at the moment around the world. Turkey is one, for example, where because of the financial difficulties that the country's running through, lots of schemes being introduced by the government to try and tempt out what they describe as mattress gold, so gold held by Turkish individuals as a store of value, and to try to get that converted into Turkish lira assets, guaranteed in some way by the government or not, as a way of strengthening the financial position of the Turkish government. And it's collected very, very, very little of this mattress gold, simply because it comes down to this trust in the state. You know, you sell your gold with a government guarantee that you won't get less back than the lira gold price at the time when you sell it back. But that means you've got to trust that the government's going to be able and or willing to make that repayment. So I think trust is at the center of the financial system. And I think certainly from an individual perspective, it's a lack of trust, which waxes and wanes along with what's happening in the world and the financial conditions. But it's a lack of trust that drives much of the investment into retail gold products.
That brings us back to the famous Ronald Reagan statement, doesn't it, about the person who's least trusted is the gentleman who comes along and says, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you. So I can imagine that kind of conversation taking place in Turkey when it comes to mattress gold. But Bob, when you take crypto assets in general, I'm not talking here about coins which are somehow linked to something that the central bank may be offering, would a person in the street basically trust something which is very indistinct, quite anonymous, but run by people of whom one has very little knowledge? I'm talking about various cryptocurrencies and so on. Okay, it's not the state, but it still seems to be very deep in opacity. Do you think this trust issue is really going to make a difference when it comes to investment, where people might say, I'd rather put my money into Bitcoin, thank you very much, rather than gold? Or do you think these are two separate questions that need to be handled in a totally differential way?
I think they're quite interrelated. And I think if we take a look at sort of how trust in the economy and counterparties has evolved, even since the Industrial Revolution, when you had the, you know, being able to transact at distance because of railroads and because of a telephone, and you couldn't rely directly on the reputation or historical experience of transacting with an individual locally. You know, you had intermediaries emerge, right? That's when investment banking, so regulation came in. We're in another structural change in the economy. What you began to see, I think, and I would pin it probably to the 60s. I mean, if people that are familiar with Wall Street and kind of the whole kind of paper and wheelbarrows of stock certificates going up and down Wall Street and moving to CUSIP forms, where all of a sudden what validated, do I own a share of something, you know, it would be a physical stock certificate. And then it moved to becoming a printout in my broker statement. You know, there's a big shift here. What am I trusting in terms of what I actually own? So we've moved to a world of actually what I would argue is system trust dependency. And when we look at cryptocurrencies, we're heavily system trust dependency, right, dependent with black boxes. We don't really know what's going on in the black box. And behind that, there's a wide spectrum of governance in terms of how decentralized these systems actually are. And in many cases, there are people who are, you know, influencing the outcomes, perhaps, in terms of movement on price and things like that. So I think we're going into a period where we're going to see a lot of tokenization, right, which is the representation in a digital twinning, if you will, of real assets. I think that step is going to get people comfortable, because you can't to take the big leap unless you're, you know, my son who's 26 and this is what he says he and all of his friends do. They just buy crypto and that's the way it's going to be in the future. You know, for most of us, we don't quite take that same leap. There are a series of smaller steps to get us from A to X, right? So I think this is really quite important in terms of the overall developments, in terms of how we're prepared to trust. And this feeds into this discourse going on right now about the metaverse. Are we really going to consume more, let's say, in household expenditure? in a digital world as opposed to a physical world. Right now, we need to go back and forth, right, in terms of payments and flows and on-ramps and on-ramps. But we're in a period of incredible structural change that I think is going to change how individuals, you know, classify what they're prepared to trust and not trust, as we went through in the Industrial Revolution.
Well, all this is something we could carry on with practically all day, but I just want to get back to maybe a more fundamental issue which is affecting us now. John, we have inflation now back in the system. People, central banks are now taking inflation seriously, particularly in the United States. That means interest rates are going up. That means that people are trusting the central bank to take action to somehow withstand inflation. Is that going to knock the gold market on the head? Or could that indeed be a source of stability because the central banks seem to be doing the right thing to somehow try to restore some tarnished faith in paper currency?
I think 2021, so last year, I think we saw evidence from financial markets, including gold, that investors were noting the increase in inflation, certainly through the first three quarters of the year, but retained the faith that central banks, particularly the Fed, had got this. It was going to sort it out. It was going to put interest rates up and inflation would go away. Probably not transitory, which has become something of a forbidden term now.
It's become a transitory word itself, I think.
Exactly. But something that central banks could control. We certainly saw signs in the gold market in the fourth quarter that that trust in central banks' ability to get inflation under control was waning somewhat. When we saw higher than expected inflation prints and the gold price went up, as opposed to earlier in the year when we saw higher than expected inflation prints and the gold price went down because interest rate expectations changed. So I think there is a developing concern that the increases in inflation that we've seen will be more protracted and potentially aren't amenable to being combated by tighter monetary policy. You can put interest rates up to slow demand, true, but you can't put interest rates up to immediately resolve some of the supply disruptions or to immediately bring on additional commodity production. So I think that it seems clear that the Fed's going to hike, and it's going to hike a lot. And I've seen projections as many as 7 interest rate hikes so far for 2022. But I do wonder about the ability of those interest rate hikes to tackle some of the fundamentals that have been driving inflation higher. So I was on another podcast that I recorded yesterday, and I said, I think we're going to be in for a very interesting 12 to 24 months in financial markets as, you know, monetary policy action, which has a lag of perhaps 18 months, gets tighter. And yet inflation may be proved to be much more protracted, I think, than people are going to enjoy.
Well, you're right. You're sounding a little bit like some things that Christine Lagarde has been saying, who I'm paraphrasing a bit. It's almost like saying that interest rates are the wrong hammer to take to this particular nail. But, Bob, just before we wrap up, just want to get into a longer-term issue, which you mentioned, geopolitics and the possibility of different spheres opening up. You must be thinking particularly of China. You mentioned the Belt and Road. Do you actually think there will be, if you like, a renminbi sphere where the renminbi, the digital yuan, will rule supreme? And this could have an effect. It could actually mean that the Chinese central bank, for example, which has been quite a big owner of gold, has been building up its gold reserves in recent years, may need to have less gold if it somehow feels secure inside these autarkic borders that it might have constructed with this Belt and Road and the digital yuan ring around it. Would you like to paint a picture of this future universe of a Chinese geopolitical sphere?
A dangerous direction to go in. But I'll say that, yes, I do think that is my thesis, personally, my view. And I think what I see interesting conversations happening bilaterally between, I think it even goes beyond Belt and Road, right? I think there are a lot of economies that are would like to be able to perhaps straddle spheres. But when it comes to perhaps a CBDC zone, they're probably going to have to pick. And I think this is going to be, again, pressured by the developments going on in crypto, because in a lot of developing and emerging economies, the crypto developments are happening very rapidly. So Kenya came out recently saying they're going to accelerate their efforts in CBDC. You know, these larger economies that are saying, you know, say Europe is another sphere, right? Unclear how fast Europe is really moving, but maybe some countries within Europe don't all agree on a slow and more prudent pace. But in the developing economies, that I think you're going to see a pickup. And we see inbound in our center significantly in the past 3 to 6 months of engaging in more work with central banks in developing and emerging economies to get them up the learning curve on this. Because I think they're becoming much more ambitious in moving on this. And they are engaging with players in these spheres and want to understand the landscape a little better before perhaps committing too deeply to any given sphere. I think I'll put it as delicately as I can.
A key word is understanding. I think there's a strong interest in finding out what China has in mind, and maybe some of us are exaggerating what they have in mind. It could be it's more prosaic, but it's a key point. Final question to you both, really looking into the crystal ball, maybe beyond the time, John, that you've just been talking about this year and the 7 possible interest rate increases, looking beyond that, do you think, and I'm putting this in very simple terms, that there could be a system under which you have, shall we say, the fiat currency system that's been around for a couple of hundred years, a new cyber or crypto asset system, which may or may not be run at least partly by central banks, but there'll be some private sector as well as that. And then gold, which after all has been around for 5,000 years. Is it too far-fetched to think of a kind of tripartite system with these three elements? And if that were to come to pass, would that be stable or unstable?
So I think that's plausible. And what I think at the, let's call it at the crypto layer or sphere, is affinity-based. The feature of programmability in both CBDCs and crypto assets is very important. And I think the feature set that we see emerging may, you think of product design, particularly in crypto, is designed to appeal to particular affinity groups extraterritorially. So if we think about a CBDC as being territorially defined, right, in terms of being fiat, attached to the nation state boundaries, I think crypto will be extraterritorial in that context. And then interesting is the position of gold, right, which kind of cuts across all of that as something which, as I referred to earlier, has a long track record of being trusted. So I believe there will be a place for it.
John, this new system that Bob and I have just invented, the tripartite system, it sounds like a new novel from George Orwell. Will this be stable or unstable?
Well, I mean, I've no idea. And I've, to be frank, I don't know enough to say whether what you're proposing makes sense or not, David. What I would say is I think it's fairly clear that crypto assets aren't going away. I think it's also very clear that there's a lot more regulation likely to come their way in the next few years and you know, potentially as soon as the next few weeks. But I don't think they're going away. I'd say the central bank digital currency angle is being pursued enthusiastically by some central banks and less so perhaps by some of the major reserve currencies or central banks behind the major reserve currencies, but I'm sure they'll watch and wait. I don't think gold's going away either. The reasons why people, individuals, institutions and central banks own gold, I don't see changing as a consequence of this. And maybe you could argue that the more that finance changes, the greater the role gold will be, because it could be the one thing that, as Bob says, has the track record, has the reassurance, and can be something that you can trust in the face of all of the developments in the digital sphere.
Well, thank you both of you. One thing that won't change is the desire to discuss these questions. It does remind you again of the French saying, the more everything changes, the more everything stays the same. But I look forward to further discussion with both of you on this. It's a fascinating area for development, and we will be watching this very closely with both Bob Waldrop and John Reed of the World Gold Council, Bob from the Cambridge Centre for Alternative Finance, and yourself, John, from the Gold Council. It's been a great pleasure to discuss this with you, and look forward to the next instalment. So this is David Marsh from OnFIF bidding you a good day wherever you are in the world listening to this, and please do tune in to the next OnFIF podcast. Goodbye for now, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the OnFIF podcast.